Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view now through September 22, 2024. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. It's made possible in part by contributions from podcast listeners. Please consider making a contribution by going to the Donate Now tab at mpbonline.org. Thanks for your financial support.
Hello and welcome to the Mississippi Arts Hour here on MPB Think Radio. I'm your host, David Lewis, Executive Director of the Mississippi Arts Commission, and I'm here with Sherry Lipscomb. Hi, Sherry. How are you?
I'm great, David. How are you?
Good. I'm doing good. Well, Sherry, I know that you have a lot of titles. You put on a lot of hats. I've been in that place before many times. But as we talked before this, you are a grant writer. You are an operations manager of a film studio and have produced films as well. But you're also the secretary to the board of directors for the Center Stage Biloxi Community Theater there on the coast. How did you find all these hats to wear?
Well, I actually worked in nonprofit for a lot of years, and that developed my grant writing career. And when my husband and I moved to Dothan, Alabama from Dallas, talk about a culture shock, in 2012, when my husband and I reconnected after being knowing each other in high school here on the coast, and he was heavily involved in community theater. I had never done theater. I never considered myself an artsy type of person, but he spent a lot of time doing it. And so it was a way for us to spend time together. So I started volunteering with Southeast Alabama Community Theater in Dothan, Alabama. And volunteering led to working for them, led to a job. And I discovered that there are all kinds of ways to be creative. And one of my gifts that I can't take any credit for, it was just given to me, is that I'm really good at herding cats and nailing jello to trees. So I was able to transfer those skills and my nonprofit experience into working in theater and just fell in love with it.
That's amazing. I love that where you didn't necessarily start out thinking of yourself as a creative person, but then found that avenue through sort of, you know, this new opportunity. What was one of your first experiences or shows that you saw with theater that really endeared you to it?
The very first show that I volunteered for when I first started volunteering with SEACT was Legally Blonde, the musical. And it was in an historic venue, a 590-seat Dothan Opera House. My first exposure to being on the backside, anything but in a seat watching theater. And I worked on publicity for that show. And it was also the first sold-out show that they'd ever had in a venue that big. So I was immediately hooked. Great group of people. I knew nothing about working in theater when I got there and learned so much from so many different people and just was able to put that together with my skills and move forward. So it's just become a huge part of my life.
And so at this point, how many years have you been working in theater?
Since 2012.
How many shows do you think that you've worked on?
Ooh, I would say probably, 50 or 60.
Wow, that's incredible. What do you think, I know that you also have this sort of identity and career within the world of filmmaking. So how did you go from, exposure and involvement in live theater and community theater into the world of film?
In 2014, SEACT produced a play called Second Samuel. It was written by a playwright from Georgia named Pamela Parker, had been incredibly successful in community theaters. In fact, won the American Association of Community Theater competition in New York 2 or 3 years before SEACT decided to do it. It's a wonderful story about essentially love your neighbor and I fell in love with the message. I worked on the production, that SEACT did. The gentleman who directed that production for SEACT is named Wayne Patterson. And Wayne had a lifelong dream to make a movie. And so he spent about 3 years convincing Ms. Parker, the playwright, to authorize and sell him the rights to make the film. And together they expanded the plot and added lots of bells and whistles. And when he was ready to make that movie, he called me and said, "I need you on board." And I said, "I don't know anything about film." And he said, "I don't care." So that's how I got there.
What was the process of making that film like? You served as the producer for that film, right?
Oh gosh, many, many, many hats. When you make independent film, it's a lot like doing community theater. You have very few resources, and so the people that are there and dedicated have to do everything. So we had to raise the money. We had to find crew and resources. We actually went through an extended process that I would do again in a heartbeat to have the film SAG-AFTRA sanctioned, so that we knew that we were using union actors and union crew. And it was a lot of hard work, and I hated it while I was doing it, and I loved it and would do it again over and over and over when it was done. It's a little like childbirth, you're miserable when it's happening, but when it's over, you forget all that, and it was a wonderful experience.
That's great. So then what brought you to the Mississippi Gulf Coast? I know you're from there, so when did you decide, when did y'all decide to head back to the coast?
I moved to the coast as a teenager. My dad was in the Air Force, so I actually went to nine different schools before I graduated from high school.
Wow.
My husband, though, was born in Perkinston, where his dad was a college administrator at Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College, original campus there in Perkinston. And when MGCCC expanded to the coast and started opening campuses like what used to be the Jefferson Davis campus and is now the Harrison County campus, the Goshen campus, all the satellite campuses. My husband was four, I think, when his dad was transferred to the coast to oversee the expansion of the Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College system on the coast.
Wow.
So he was here, and when I moved to the coast in the ninth grade, I think, he and I became friends. We actually lived five houses apart on the same street. We now live in the house that he grew up in.
Wow.
And we went our separate ways after. I mean, we didn't date in high school. We were friends, but we knew each other pretty well. And back in 2010, we reconnected on Facebook and started communicating and visiting back and forth. And in when we decided to get married in late 2012, I moved to Dothan, Alabama, where my husband had been teaching speech communication and theater classes for the Dothan campus of Troy University for several years. Fast forward to 2014, 2015, his parents were in their 90s. His mother developed dementia and eventually had to move into a memory care facility. And his father died. And so at that point, Bill had 17, 18 years in with the Alabama retirement system and decided he had taught for 4 years in Mississippi. And so he still had that tenure credit toward retirement. And when family situations, including the fact that we have a grandson here on the coast, told us, "Hey, maybe it's time to move back and support our family and be near the grandchildren and get ready to start drawing a state of Alabama retirement and work toward a state of Mississippi retirement." Then things just kind of all came together to tell us it was the right time to come back here. So we moved here from Dothan in 2017.
Okay.
We've been back on the coast since 2017.
Now, when you had moved to the coast and y'all were in school together and lived five houses apart and I love that. Was there community theater or anything in the arts that you were involved in or that y'all did at that time? Was that readily available for you when you were here?
In high school, I was on the debate team and the annual staff, that sort of thing. Bill was a baseball player. But in the early 80s, after I had moved away and he was still here, he began acting with Center Stage. So he is really the driving force between why theater, it's just that when I got there, I found it was a perfect fit. But he has actually been performing on stage since the early 80s, wherever he lived. He took every opportunity to get involved in community theater, and he actually appeared in the film Second Samuel that I
Oh, wow.
produced. And he continues to act. In fact, he is preparing right now for the role of George in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, that he will
Wow.
co-star in with our board pet president, Kennedy Miazza, the end of April. So I get to live with George for the next couple of months, and that's lots of fun.
I love that. That's great. Well, I think that's a good way for us to kind of talk about Center Stage Biloxi. So when was that theater started? Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the theater?
Absolutely. So Center Stage was founded in 1975. This is our 49th season. And it was actually founded by our then and current artistic director, Chuck White, Dot and Martin Miazza, whose daughter Kennedy is now our board president, Chester Dela Cruz, Boyce Holloman, the late attorney Boyce Holloman, and beloved character actor, and Mrs. Jo Love Little. They were part of another community theater group here on the coast, and were not artistically satisfied with whitewashed, always upbeat and happy productions. So they chose to break away, not with animosity, but just they wanted something different. And so they chose to break away and form Center Stage in 1975. And our very first production was Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
That's great.
So from 1975 until 1990, we were located in rented space in Gulfport. And then a dedicated group of individuals got together, somehow got the city of Biloxi to give them $50,000 to get started and built their own facility that we still occupy now in Biloxi.
And tell us about kind of where in Biloxi that is.
It is just north of Edgewater Mall off Eisenhower on Rue Palafox. And so it's really convenient for all points on the coast. It's like, I would say, a quarter of a mile off the beach. So
It's in
it's
a
a.
great location. I had the fortune of being able to visit, of course, back in May, and really enjoyed being able to see the theater a little before the work had been done, but also see how close it was to everything. It's kind of the center point along the coast a little bit. It's sort of not too far. It's sort of on the what western side of Biloxi, closer towards Gulfport than closer towards
Correct.
Ocean Springs, which is nice to be able to pull both all of those communities into that space, which I think is great. What types of, annual programming does the theater do?
Well, we do four season shows, and then we do a summer musical fundraiser that's not a part of our season. We do a week-long workshop for young people called Stage Stars. Every summer, we do two children's shows, and we have had as many as 192 children cast in our children's shows. We typically double cast them each role so that the kids alternate nights and everybody gets two chances to be on stage. But it's ranged from, as we ramped back up from COVID, maybe 70 or 80 kids, but we've had as many as close to 200 kids in shows. And then we also typically do another fundraiser or two throughout the year. But we have learned some lessons that I will credit directly to our Building Fund for the Arts program about how to develop new revenue streams. So we are actually launching for the upcoming season a four-part series called Curtain Calls and Cocktails. That will be 4 weekends of two performances, a Saturday night performance and a Sunday matinee of re review type singing and entertaining. The first one's upcoming in May. It's called Surf's Up and Summer's Coming. And then we'll do three more throughout the course of the year that it's a great way to get just a couple people in, a couple performances in, but get a lot of people to just come and have a good time. Our concessions center is called the Stage Right Cafe. That's a project that I took on when I joined the board in 2021, right as we were reopening after COVID. Figured out how to navigate the process of getting a what's called a theater temporary liquor permit. And so we have signature cocktails for every performance that we do, with the exception of children's shows. We don't serve alcohol at children's shows. And it's just become a really good revenue source for us. Not only that, it really enhances the theater going experience for our patrons. And they walk through the doors going, "What's your signature cocktail this time?" So I get to have a lot of fun with that. Not only create the cocktail, but make up cute names for it and figure out how to use it to promote the show. Occasionally, although not every show, we will have a specific concessions sponsor. And so when we do, we have an event called Wind Down Wednesday. Wednesday in the Bible Belt is typically a historical slow night for theater. So that kind of encourages people to come out on a Wednesday night when they might not otherwise. And we offer, $1 or $2 off on wine and have a caterer come in and offer pre-show appetizers. And so that's really, really been phenomenal for us as well.
This is Larry Morrissey. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The show is broadcast on MPB's statewide radio network on Sundays at 5 p.m. For access to all our past shows, please subscribe to the Arts Hour on your favorite podcasting app.
Look at your vehicle, think of MPB. Need to get rid of your ride? Donate it by calling 877-MPB, the number 4, CAR. Need to have some work done on your truck? Listen to AutoCorrect Thursdays at 10, Saturdays at 11. An MPB license plate reminds you that MPB is with you wherever you go. Go to your county office and ask for an MPB car tag. MPB and CARS, better together.
Welcome back to the Arts Hour here on MPB Think Radio. I'm your host, David Lewis, Executive Director of the Mississippi Arts Commission, here with Sherry Lipscomb, a grant writer and operations manager for a film studio, a film producer, and secretary to the board of directors for Center Stage Biloxi. Sherry, welcome back. It was great hearing all about what the theater has provided. I really love what you said about the signature cocktails. I think that that's such a fun thing to, and it's clearly paying off, right? Because people are asking what it's going to be at the next show. What are some of the favorite ones that you've had so far?
Well, let's see. When we reopened the theater after we completed our Building Fund for the Arts project, our first show was Death Trap. So occasionally I'm able to get a frozen drink machine, a slushy machine. So I did Death by Daiquiri, which was a frozen peaches and cream daiquiri that people are still talking about two shows later.
Yes.
We just had a phenomenal sold out, extended and sold out again run of The Play That Goes Wrong. And for that show, I did two signature cocktails. One was the Boozy Banana Pudding, which was vanilla vodka and banana liqueur and Irish cream and topped with whipped cream and vanilla wafer crumbles. And then I also did a mashup of a Bellini and a Bellatini, and a martini called a Bellatini. That was a strawberry puree with about a half a shot of whipped cream vodka in it and topped with champagne and called it the drink that goes right. So,
That's really good.
yeah, so it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
I love that a sort of way to express like the culinary arts, almost like mixology into the world of theater. That's really great. You talked about, well, and I before the break, I said that it was a recent production of Sweeney Todd, but you actually have Sweeney Todd coming up. I was wrong. It has not yet happened. Will you talk about sort of what is coming up at the theater, what people can come down to the coast and check out and see, but also when you're doing Sweeney Todd?
Absolutely. So we are doing Sweeney Todd in July, July 18th through 28th. We just announced our phenomenal cast on social media and our website on Monday of this week. So we are just thrilled about it. I've already created a private Facebook group for the cast and crew so they can start getting to know each other and learn a little bit about us and get questions answered ahead of time. So we're really, really excited and looking forward to that. Also in the upcoming season, and of course there are things I can't say because we haven't paid for the rights yet and we're not allowed to, but I can tell you that we are doing an original murder mystery dinner theater that is outside our season. It's a fundraiser that we will do at the Great Southern Club in September that's being co-written by Chuck White, our artistic director, David Delk, one of our board members, and a couple of other people are contributing to that. It's something we'd never done before, and we did it last summer when we were shut down for renovation to phenomenal success. So we decided to do it again as a fundraiser. Our kids' shows for next season, we already know what those are because they are adapted by our artistic director, Chuck White. So there's no royalties involved. And we are doing Midsummer Night's Dream. For our fall and winter production. And then next June, we'll be doing Tom Sawyer. We also have Misery, based on the book by Stephen King, in strong consideration for next season. And in December, we will do the Boogie Woogie Christmas Show, which was written by David Delk. We have done it before. In fact, when I was with SEACT, I got in touch with David and said, hey, can we do your show? So I can
Wow.
talk about that because it's royalty free. And so we're doing that in December. David actually wrote the Boogie Woogie radio show first, which we did a couple of seasons ago and sold out an again extended run of it. And the Christmas show is kind of a sequel to that. In fact, when we did the Boogie Woogie Christmas show at SEACT several years ago, before I came back to the coast, the final scene involves a guy coming home from the war after his fiance has been waiting patiently for him. And as a surprise that no one knew about, we actually had a couple get married at the end of the closing show, like on stage. Our
What?
sound designer and director was a licensed minister, and he got on stage and married them. So
How fun.
yeah, so that's what we've got coming up. Of course, we'll have our other season shows. We'll have the rest of that series, Curtain Calls and Cocktails, that I mentioned earlier. We've got an upcoming auction for the arts, an online auction that we're doing. We just started with The Play That Goes Wrong, which is a show that we just closed Sunday. We just started themed raffle baskets for each show, and we didn't want to put a bunch of broken stuff in a raffle basket. So we called this one The Raffle That Goes Right for The Play That Goes Wrong. We got about $600 in donated items for that basket. And during the run of the show, we sold $2,660 worth of raffle tickets. So
Wow.
we're just looking for all sorts of way to generate new revenue streams and get people excited about coming to the theater. But obviously, our number one mission is to put out quality theater on the Gulf Coast. And in addition to Chuck's expertise, because he has been our artistic director for 49 seasons now, we have a phenomenal set designer and creative director named Tim Baker, who had a long and storied career in designing theater and film and stage sets all over the country. He is a master mold maker and sculptor, and his heart is really in puppets, like the big massive puppets that you see. So Tim creates some phenomenal sets that just blow people's minds. In fact, Tim helped Ocean Springs High School develop all the life-size puppets for the Jungle Book, that's J-U-N-G-A-L book, that they won the Mississippi Theater Association's theater competition with and are performing this weekend at SETC in Mobile. So we're just really blessed with some amazing creativity that makes the production value and the quality of our programming second to none.
That's really incredible. So you said that your artistic director has had 49 seasons. Is this upcoming one his 50th, or is it the one
it
after
is.
That? Wow, how exciting. That's incredible.
Yes.
Well, it's great that you have this huge legacy of such, you know, icons and sort of great long-time collaborators to keep that product so excellent. I think that's really tremendous. You talked about the need for additional revenues. But I also want to kind of, before we kind of go into that, I want to talk about what has sort of been y'all's experience coming out of the pandemic. I know that nationwide, it's a lot of theaters struggle to get people in seats sometimes, but the moment that people start to get into the theater, they're just so once again, you know, transported, captivated, enamored with that experience because it can't be beat. It sounds like y'all are having really good seasons. What has that reaction or sort of that reception been within the community at coming out of the pandemic?
It's been remarkable. People were eager to get back to the theater, you know, and obviously we followed all the public safety guidelines that we needed to coming out of the pandemic. But I think one thing that really put things in motion for us coming out of the pandemic was that was also a time of internal change for us. Board members dropped out, new board members came on board. Our current president, who is Kennedy Maiazza, her parents were founders of the theater. And so she came back on as president of the board, and it is really important, a driving force for Kennedy to leave the theater in better shape than she took it, so that the next generation, you know, because none of us are getting any younger, can start from a good place. So she did a really good job of recruiting new board members who had the passion and the skills needed, because we are not an advisory board, we are a working board. And so we just were really fortunate to put a good group of people together to make that happen.
That's amazing. So let's talk about too. You mentioned like the BFA project kind of inspired or showed that you needed to sort of investigate new revenue streams. Can you talk a little bit about that? What does that mean? What sort of brought you to that place?
Well, we were fortunate in that when we started with the BFA project, we had some operating reserves that had accumulated. And so we were able to leverage those as part of our matching funds for the grant. But then when you have a show that doesn't sell quite as well as others, and let's face it, they're not all sold out hits, but you need to do those shows anyway, because they're
right.
Important creatively and to your audiences. Not everyone loves a farce or a musical. As I worked on the grant side and the actual project side of the BFA project, our fundraising committee, which was chaired by John B. Shorty Sneed, and with a tremendous amount of help from a lot of people, but primarily Kennedy Maiazza and Victoria Salome Chambers, that fundraising committee really, really worked hard to tap every connection and every resource that they had in the community. And there are a lot after 49 years, you know. So it was truly good old fashioned fundraising. Plus we did the dinner theater musical review called Let's Misbehave that generated $15,000 in profits that we're able to contribute toward the project. But it opened our eyes to the fact that there are other ways that we can be generating revenue if volunteers just get involved and do it. So that's what we're doing.
That's really wonderful. Well, if you're listening now and you're wondering what the heck is BFA, Building Fun for the Arts is what BFA is. It's a grant program that the Mississippi Arts Commission provides that allows for organizations and city entities to apply for up to $500,000 in matching funds for arts-based facilities. This could be construction, it could be design work, for renovations, new buildings. It gives a lot of great relief and investment into some of our most precious cultural institutions. It's a program that was brought back a couple years ago, and the Mississippi State Legislature has been very gracious to give us funding for the past 2 years, $3 million 2 years ago and $5 million last year. And Center Stage Biloxi was one of the recipients from the first round.
This is Larry Morrissey. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. The show is broadcast on MPB's statewide radio network on Sundays at 5 p.m. For access to all our past shows, please subscribe to the Arts Hour on your favorite podcasting app.
Do you drive a vehicle? Then you'll find AutoCorrect helpful, especially on Coach Charlie's Tip of the Week. Listen to our podcast with me, Coach Charlie Melton, on any podcasting platform or on the MPB Public Media app.
Welcome back to the Arts Hour here on MPB Think Radio. I'm your host, David Lewis, Executive Director of the Mississippi Arts Commission, here today with Sherry Lipscomb, who is the Secretary to the Board of Directors for Center Stage Biloxi. Center Stage recently received a Building Fund for the Arts grant, which I mentioned before the break here, but I wanted to talk to Sherry about that process. It is a grant that the Mississippi Arts Commission provides that you apply for. Sherry, I know that you were sort of project manager of sorts on this and wrote the grant and did a lot of that work. Can you talk about what that process was from the very beginning of when you kind of saw it, wrote it? What was that like?
Well, because I've written a lot of grants for other people along the way, I know how to look for opportunities, and I am also well aware that bricks and mortar grants in general, but particularly for the arts, are like unicorns. They almost never come along. And so when I saw the opportunity become available, because I'm on your mailing list, I get a lot of notifications because I also write the annual operating grants for Center Stage. And I immediately approached the board and I said, look, we need to figure out how to do this. I mean, it's not likely that we will ever get another opportunity like this in our lifetime. Because of course, at that time, we had no idea there would be a round two. So the first thing we had to do was write a letter of intent. And I, so we had a relationship with an architect who we trusted. He and his wife had been involved with the theater. And so he helped me develop a scope and a project budget for the letter of intent. We submitted the letter of intent, waited our turn to find out whether or not we would be invited to submit a full proposal. We were. And then the real work began. So we fine-tuned that budget. We figured out things were going to cost us a whole lot more than we thought they would. But we were committed, and we knew that we were going to do it. So I submitted the proposal, and we were approved for a round one BFA grant for about $106,000, which ended up being about 30% of our $348,000 building project. But it also lit a fire under us to raise the rest of the money. So,
well, that's a great point about raising the rest of the money. BFAs are such big projects and they require a match. We will provide up to 60%, but in your case, it was about 30 because of the size of the budget. And that takes a village. Do you want to talk about some of those partners that were involved?
Oh, absolutely. So the fundraising committee set about contacting everyone they knew, everyone we'd ever done business with, anyone who had ever sponsored a show, anybody that they had personally done business with, people that we knew that loved the theater. And we offered sponsorship levels for businesses with certain packages of benefits that came with that in terms of getting their name out there. We also offered sponsorship levels for individuals. And everybody racked their brains about who can we contact. We sent individual sponsorship letters to everyone on our mailing list, which is about 2,500 people. We had one anchor gift. The John B. Shorty and Patty Sneed family and their son Johnny, who is a character actor who you would probably recognize from television, donated a large gift in memory of the Sneed's daughter Lori, who back in the early 90s had an automobile accident during her freshman year at Ole Miss, became a paraplegic and a quadriplegic, and then lived the rest of her life, many years that way, until 2017 with a very successful career with CNN. And so so the Sneed family gave a large gift in Lori's memory, and our expanded lobby is named the Lori Sneed Lobby in her memory. But we had gifts range from $10,000 to $50,000. We have a tribute wall on the at the entry in our new expanded space, recognizing people who gave at a certain level and above, and the community just wanted to be part of it. You know, they love Center Stage and they wanted to be part of it.
Well, and you also mentioned that, you know, the other ways that people, I guess, got involved was going to the other events that you did, like the dinner theater.
Absolutely.
That raised, you know, the profits from that went to the building project. That's another, you know, every size of engagement there mattered.
Absolutely. It really did. And we had never done dinner theater before in our 49-year history because we didn't have the space to do it. But we have a board member who is also the board president of the Great Southern Club in downtown Gulfport. A beautiful space with amazing views on top of the Hancock Bank building. So we partnered with them for the space and the catering to get it done, and it was a phenomenal success, so much so that we're going to do it again this fall.
I think that's so great. So once you got the grant, what was that like? And then what were the steps that you took to start a kick off the project, and what was that sort of, you know, construction process like?
Well, the first thing we had to do, obviously, was raise our matching funds, you know, so we could get part of the money from Mississippi Arts Commission. So we focused on that for the first couple of months. We knew we were going to continue to use the architect that we already had a relationship with. He was very good to us financially in terms of donating part of his professional services. And we trusted him. So he was phenomenal and expert at developing the public bid process. We bid out the construction job and selected Vision Constructors, President John Rollins, who has an amazing team. I'm telling you, I've done construction jobs and other nonprofit work that I've done, and I've never seen a better team from John to his site supervisors to his engineering team.
That's
so we
great.
Got really lucky, put a great project together. I knew enough about what I was doing to make the reporting process easy by never ever intermingling operating funds with building funds. So we had a separate account that, you know, it all went into. We never had to pay anyone out of that account except our architect and our contractor, because the contractor paid all the subcontractors. So it made reporting and accountability really, really easy for us to do it that way. So we were awarded the grant, I guess it was November, December, when they announced awards. We spent a couple of months raising our matching funds, and then we waited until our season was over to demolish our lobby. And so we started demolition in late May, and construction was complete for us to reopen in October. So during that time frame, I was, you know, there was a little bit of paperwork involved. I think there was an interim grant report that I did during that time, but mostly I was boots on the ground with the contractor and his team, just, you know, helping make decisions in the moment. We had a building committee, a renovation committee, that, you know, if it was going to cost us more money, I ran decisions by them. But otherwise, I was just kind of owner's rep on the project, and they're in the mess and chaos as much as I cat could be, you know, taking progress photos and sending them to Mac and keeping Mac informed and in what was going on. And then, you know, as the project drew to a close, there are always things that are not part of your project budget. They're not a scope, you know, a part of that scope that come up. So we began to think about things that I did, like, you know, okay, now we got to buy furniture for this lobby, and, you know, and we're going to need a new sign here, and we're going to need a, you know, this or a that. And so it was kind of a frantic frenzy of getting all that together right before we were ready to open. But we really never had a glitch in terms of moving forward. And I think that's of tremendous credit to both our architect and construction team, as well as the board and volunteers of like, okay, we need this, we got to do it, let's get it done.
That's excellent. Well, what was it like? You know, what was the what's the reception been since you've opened this new space?
Oh gosh. So most opening night, the first show after the renovation was all invited guests, people who had contributed to the project in a meaningful way. And of course, every seat in our 165 seat house, plus probably five or six more, but don't tell the fire marshal, were there. We offered free hors d'oeuvres. We had a ribbon cutting, and we didn't sell anything from concessions that night. We just gave it away. You know, so it was, but everybody that walks into the space is just absolutely amazed. On a regular basis, people who haven't been to the theater a long time still, and we reopened in October, they'll knock on the door when it's locked, but someone's there and say, I just want to see what it looks like. Or people walk in for the first time and they go, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. It's so big. It's so beautiful, you know? So people are still thrilled with it. And yes, it's nice that it's lovely and a more comfortable space, but it's far more functional and
Yeah.
practical. And it offers accessibility to people that just could not comfortably get in there in the past. And we want to be a theater for everyone. And this helps
Yeah.
us get closer to that.
That's excellent. Well, congratulations on finishing it. For the listeners who are tuning in, let's recap some of the shows that you've got. We've got about a minute left. You've got Sweeney Todd this summer. You've got a couple of kids programs and a new season coming out, the 50th season for your artistic director. What are some ways that people can find out more information about Center Stage Biloxi?
Well, our website is centerstagebiloxi.org. We are Center Stage Biloxi on Facebook. You can also email our box office at boxoffice@centerstagebiloxi.org and request to be put on our email distribution list to find that out everything that's going on the minute that we do.
Well, thank you, Sherry, so much for joining me today here on the Arts Hour. It was great to hear about this incredible project. And if you're listening out there, do make a trip down to the coast, or if you're already on the coast, get on over to Center Stage Biloxi to check out some great community theater, live theater. You can't beat it. And it's right here in Mississippi. Thank you, Sherry, so much.
Thank you, David.
Thanks for listening to this MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB depends on support from listeners, so if you can, please contribute today at mpbonline.org.
What is Chalkboard Chat? It's an MPB education podcast. It's a variety show providing information and resources for teachers, students, parents, guardians, and everyday people on various topics. It's learning something new with every publication. Chalkboard Chat. Find the podcast or listen from chalkboardchat.mpbonline.org.